Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. So they say you can't plan for the unexpected, but whoever said that obviously didn't know about Aflac. You probably know the Aflac Duck, but you might not know what Aflac can do for you. For example, did you know they pay cash that can help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover? If you get sick or injured, Aflac pays cash that can be put towards copays and deductibles to even non-medical expenses like rent or your mortgage payments. It's completely up to you. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
Pro paint days are back at Lowe's, and MyLowe's Pro Rewards members can save even more with limited time deals. Right now, buy one, get one half off select HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams primer and ceiling paint. Plus, get free same-day delivery to your job site when you order by 2 p.m. Offer valid through 6/13, delivery by 8 p.m. Subject to driver availability. Additional terms apply. See Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery for details.
Hey guys, if you want more Girls Next Level tea, behind the scenes, and deep dives, head over to our Patreon page for the exclusive content you can only find there. We have a whole other podcast called Slumber Party with Holly and Bridget. We have the commercial-free, uncensored video version of Girls Next Level, our personal scrapbooks, advice, Q&A, and so much more. I'm up in the comments talking to you guys. It's all the good stuff. We've been doing this for about a year and a half now, so there's a ton of content to binge. So go over to patreon.com/girlsnextlevel to join our Patreon family. We love you guys so much. We'll see you there.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bridget.
And this
is Girls Next Level.
Welcome back to Girls Next Level, everybody. I'm so excited because today we are getting some answers. At the end of our season one last year, we had a producer on the show to fill us in on some things, but now we're getting a completely different perspective. We have an editor here, one of the most prolific editors on the show. Her name is Molly Schock, and she worked on the show from season two, which we've been talking about all the past year, through season six. So we're going to find out so much stuff. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you so much. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be here.
I am excited. Like, I had so many questions. I think I whipped your questions out so fast, and I had like 47 of them instantly, and I sent them to Holly like immediately. I was like, I have so many questions for her. And not only that, but I wanted to say we've been kind of in touch for a little while now, and you have been listening to the podcast and rewatching the episodes and making your own notes.
I do. I have my notes just in case there's specific things I need, you know,
it's
refreshers
on. It's a whole packet of stuff.
I'm so excited to hear.
Me too.
First, can I tell you why I'm dragging ass though?
Please. Why?
I bring this up because I think other parents out there can relate to it. My kids are not in school right now. And I'm so exhausted. They have surf camp usually. So they're pretty occupied usually during the weekdays. But like, I have joint custody, and their dad is an amazing dad. Like, so hands-on, such a great dad. But our bedtime routines are so different. Like, I put them to bed at a reasonable hour, and I'm just like with them during the day. I'm not working on anything. So once they go to bed, like, I stay up a few hours later, and that's when I do my work and do my stuff. But he lets them up until like midnight, running wild, running crazy. And we overlap the last couple of days. And like, when they know their dad is there, they're not going to follow my rules.
Oh, no.
So I am, and I'm still like on this whole like thyroid medication journey and trying to like figure that out. So I'm such a zombie right now.
Oh, no.
But I'm so excited to hear what you have to say.
I want to know, what is a reasonable bedtime?
Well, I try to get them on a school night. I try to get them asleep by 8. But with their dad, it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I'm on the struggle bus today. So hard.
I used to hate bedtime, too. Oh. I was like, no, I want to just stay up and watch TV and like do stuff.
It's summer. It's still light out. Why should I be going to bed?
You're right. It is still light out at 8 o'clock here.
Oh, they use that argument. I'm trying to like shut every curtain so they can't see.
You're like, no, it's dark.
I
it's
know.
Dark.
They're like, Mom, it's still day out.
So, Molly.
Hi.
Okay, first, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, where'd you grow up?
Sure. My name's Molly Schock. I grew up in Northern California. I had family from Lodi. My parents went to UOP.
That's so crazy.
I moved down to Los Angeles to go to LMU. Wow. So it has been very odd knowing your guys' life stories the past you know, almost 20 years, because a lot of it overshadows mine. But I went to college. I thought I wanted to be a director. And then I realized I did not have a burning story I had to share with the world. But I was really good at helping other people tell their stories. And I really became fascinated with editing. And when I was doing my college productions, I hated being on the set. I hated the, oh, we're losing the light and the hurry up and wait. And oh, we don't have the permits for this. But if I could just like get all my tapes and go in a room, close the door with a pizza and a six pack of Diet Coke, and I'd come out 12 hours later and I had something, like that was really, really satisfying. So I knew by the time I left college, I wanted to be an editor. Mm-hmm. And my very first job was working about a year after college. I was hired by this company to edit promos for Baywatch and Geraldo and Family Feud. And the reason I was hired was because there was a staff editor there named Dave Comtois, who was leaving to start a new production company called Beantown. And Dave Comtois' best friend was a gentleman named Kevin Burns. So Kevin Burns has kind of been part of my life since the very beginning of my career. So I was at this company for a number of years, and then finally I decided to go freelance. So a couple more years go by, and I started editing things like, I did documentaries for History Channel, and then I started doing shows on E! Like E! True Hollywood Stories, and started doing like those documentary type shows, because that's what I like to watch too. And I got a chance to edit. I used to teach swing dance lessons at the Derby. And a gentleman showed up one time and he wanted to take private lessons from me. His name was Stephen Smith, and exchanged business cards. And he said, oh, you're an editor. And I said, oh, you're a producer. He said, oh, yes, I edit A&E Biography. I said, oh, I'd love to work on that show. I love that show so much. And so I got hired, and I would get notes from Kevin. And at this point, Kevin Burns is the executive producer of the show. But it took a couple episodes till I actually met him in person.
And how did that go?
Because it now been years of me knowing his reputation definitely precedes him. Here's the thing. Kevin is truly one of the smartest producers I've ever worked with. And he hires amazing people. I am still closer friends with people that I worked with in those first few jobs than people, you know, I've spent like the past five seasons editing MasterChef. Ultimately, I did a bunch of documentary type shows. And then Girls Next Door came along. And that was like my first real reality show that I worked on. I treated it like a documentary. It was like you'd take footage, you'd take interviews, the footage would complement what you're seeing and hopefully heighten or be contradictory, and you could juxtapose things. And I loved it. And, you know, it was a very campy, lighthearted thing. And it was, I like those things too. I went on from that. I started doing pretty much every competition reality show you can think of. I've done Survivor and Project Runway. And I've done five seasons now of MasterChef and Naked and Afraid and RuPaul's Drag Race. I've gotten very involved in the union. I'm very active in the editing community. And I love talking about unscripted television, but definitely Girls Next Door has got a very, very special place in my heart. So here we are today. There's your long-winded answer.
I love a long-winded answer.
I know. How did Girls Next Door come to be? Like, did Kevin say, oh, I really like what you're doing on this?
I didn't join it until season two. Mm-hmm. We were doing some documentaries on Star Wars. So Kevin had a company called Prometheus, and he had a stable of editors that he would just kind of keep on as long as he had projects. And Kevin was an incredibly prolific producer. When he passed, I saw a stat that he produced over 800 hours of television. And that is not a vanity title, that he produced them. So he would have things like, you know, Secrets of Hollywood or just a lot of different shows. So he'd keep me working. And so he didn't have me in mind. I don't quite know why. I never really asked, but I was certainly interested. I saw it kind of being edited down the hall for me, and I was definitely intrigued by it. But they brought me in for season two, and I just think I was a really, really good fit. It was supposed to be a comedy, but I never wanted to make it At Your Expense. The first season, I think there were a lot of, and this is not fair of me to say, but just to stereotype, but there was mostly men that edited mm-hmm. the first season. And I think, you know, the show was wildly popular to women. And I think I tapped into why that was. And so I was able to, over the years, bring out more and more of that and show you in more than just two dimensions.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
And we've noticed the change too, because we noticed that like the nudity gets kind of less and less as you go on. And I started to feel more comfortable in season two, and then further on each season, like it's a huge difference as you see as the seasons go on.
Well, and I really feel like there's a big difference between season one and the rest of the seasons. Like season one really, I mean, they tried to make us like look petty and out for each other. And they tried to create a different environment than what it was. And I feel like in season two, it switches. And then the rest of it, it just shows it more how it really was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like so like that, yeah. At least not when Girls Next Door was shooting. There were times. There were times.
And there certainly were, you know, there were things that we were still like, I don't want to say scripted, but like you had to hit story beats. You mm-hmm. had, there were times we'd ask for pickup bites because we had to connect these thoughts. And there were these times what you've referred to them as Frankenstein episodes where we just kind of took three themed topics, like whether it was you guys getting cars or the pets or career and made it into an episode. And so we'd have to like, we would be editing and we would write out and do a scratch voiceover of, okay, if they said something like this, this will help me link these two unrelated scenes together differently. And yeah, there is some scripting of it, but I tell people this still to the day, the real privilege of editing Girls Next Door, as opposed to, and I've done, you know, housewife type shows and docu-follow shows, those are much more what I call soft scripted or improv, where, okay, you're going to go into this room and you are going to reveal this information and you're going to react and you're going to be upset. And so you're actually kind of being given your motivation. You know, for the first couple of seasons, certainly they just look at your calendars and see what, you know, looked interesting. And there would be the tentpole episodes, like you're going on a trip or you're having a birthday party. But there would still be, you know, maybe a third of the episodes would be these kind of, well, let's just see what happens. And maybe there's an episode there, mm-hmm. which was a real privilege.
Yeah. We talked about that at the end of last season because there was a lot of just them hanging around with the cameras. And they would just come into our room and shut the TV off and like cameras on you. And you're like, okay, I guess I'll start rhinestoning this outfit yeah. or getting ready for scrapbooking or something. And they just were just around all the time. And when we were talking to Jen, she was the producer.
And I unfortunately never worked with her because she did not stay on for season two. So I never really had any crossover with her.
Yeah, she's awesome though. But she was like, it would never happen like that now. We would never just be like hanging out. Like everything would be scheduled. We'd know exactly what we're getting out of each scene. You would know, we would know, we'd go in, we'd get it, and we're done.
Yeah.
So it's just so different. It's so 100%. Different than the way we shot it, because it literally was like just having a camera crew living with us all the time and just filming everything we did. Obviously, they weren't there 24 hours a day.
No.
But they were there a lot.
But that also just goes to like the newness of it, for because this was Kevin's first unscripted show and he was figuring it out and we were figuring out our editing styles. Like, I went back and rewatched all of season two and I'm like, there's some things I am just cringing. Like I would never do that. And it's funny because in the Mutiny on the Booty, when you've been picked on and you're having your moment and then Kendra comes over and gives you your massage, your hair's all up in curlers. Like that massage scene was from way before.
Yeah.
And I remember like, I can't put this in here, Kevin. And the continuity's all off. And he had a saying, continuity is for pussies, because he just did not care.
That
sometimes.
Makes sense, because the continuity is all over the place.
Yeah, now we know.
Yeah, we're in sweats sometimes, and then we're in like sundresses, and then we're back in the sweats again. And now we're in a different outfit.
We certainly learned like interviews where we would have to sometimes have you wear this, because that would drive him crazy when the costume changing would happen. And we've realized, oh, we need to be more thoughtful when we're shooting the interviews or asking them to, you know, oh, they've got to wear that shirt again or whatever. If you watch a reality show like RuPaul's Drag Race, if you ever watch the confessionals, you'll notice they are always in one outfit because they tell them like, what's going to be your confessional outfit? And they wear it every single time so that we can pick from whatever point of the season, you know, so we don't have that costume changing thing.
What's that saying?
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Honestly, that would have been way easier for me than to have to like think of a different top each time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that that's so hard, but like It did get hard sometimes because then you'd come down and they'd be like, oh, you've already worn that shirt. We can't use that one again. Then you go up and change and they're like, oh, I don't really like that color with the background. Can you go change again? And you're like, and then you come back and they're like, oh, that one's like, is that fitting weird? Is that like gap in here? Like, I maybe you should go change that one again.
And you had to walk across the property, which was annoying.
Yeah. So yeah, we did get more aware of that. But I do remember in the earlier episodes, I kept Kevin didn't care. He wanted the story to be told a certain way. And if that meant you were changing outfits because we couldn't get it all from one interview, you know, continuity is for pussies.
That is so
That's crazy.
Before you were brought on to Girls Next Door, did Kevin like sit you down and give you like the rundown? Like, this is how we do this show. This is what this girl is. This is what that girl is. Or did you just kind of learn as you went?
Not really. I think I learned as I went. I mean, I certainly went back and watched all of season one. So mm-hmm. I knew who the people were, but it was things like learning the layout. Like we would have the B-roll and there's a couple episodes in the early season where like I hear you say, oh, you're zooming into Kendra's room, but that's my bedroom or whatever. And I'm usually pride myself on shows. Like I like to establish geography for the audience because they want to feel they know their way around the house or the mm-hmm. set or whatever. So that was something I quickly learned was the geography of like whose window was where. And if you're going down this hall, you're going to want to turn this way to go into this office and have that make sense. But no, he never really sat me down to say what his grand scheme was. And let me just back up a little bit. The way an episode came together is they'd go out to the field, they'd shoot everything. They'd come back to the office, they would have story meetings and they would kind of download everything that had been shot, whether it was for something that was known or planned or oh, this funny thing happened. And then they'd start to write out like 3x5 index cards and they literally would just put up on the wall, you know, this act is going to, or this scene will go in this act. And then, you know, you could move cards around sometimes or, well, where's the act break going to be? Is it going to be a complete thought and we totally change days or are we going to continue the scene or whatever? And then they would give us string outs, like rough video string outs of, and it's so funny to call them string outs now because they really, especially in the early days, it was just chunks of footage. Like here's 20 minutes of Kendra getting dressed. And then I have to find the shots. Nowadays, if I'm editing a string out, I'll get like maybe 5 minutes of footage for something that's going to be 3 minutes because the story producers know their job so well to put in the interview bites. And now I was just given a binder of transcripts. And if I would get some standard bites, but almost always I would try and get rid of them first because I want to see the reality play first. So I want to see how much of it I can let play in reality. And then if I need an interview bite to kind of jump time or location, you know, I'll put it in there. But I only really want to use an interview bite if I'm getting new information. I really, really do not like the see and say where like, I was really excited because she was going to open my present. And then you see her, of course you are excited. I can see that. So, but if it was something like the last present I got or didn't go over really well. So, you know, I really hope I can knock it out of the park this time. That gives you a little more information mm-hmm. or stakes. So I would get all this footage. I'd cut the act or the show. Sometimes I'd cut an entire episode by myself. And once the show was a show, Kevin would watch it. He never really watched things in progress. And because it was dangerous for us, for him to watch the thing in process because he would be, well, why is it this way? And like, well, because it's not done.
Yeah.
And that would just make more work for us.
Yeah.
So he almost never saw a show until it at least was a complete show. And there were two occasions I'm very proud of. I showed him an episode and he went output it and took it up to the mansion. And one was the San Diego episode and one was the Alaska episode. And so he trusted us enough to know what the sensibilities were of what he wanted, what Hef wanted, what, you know, the show was. So
did you have any preconceived ideas of us before you, like when people think about the girls at the Playboy Mansion?
I mean, I didn't think you were what the worst is out there perceived of you. And I could see that there was an intelligence there, that there was a personality there. You were fun and girly, and like maybe I'm not that girly, but I have elements of that. I can see you're, you know, very, you know, in love with you, and you were wanting to be taken seriously, and Kendra just wants to have fun. I mean, I had many times where I really had an ass full of Kendra trying to edit her. I mean, because people ask me this of like, oh, what are they really like? I'm like, I've watched hundreds of hours of footage of these women, listen to podcasts. I would never dream of telling you what they're really like, because you're more complex than that. But there were times when, like, if Kendra was being portrayed as like she's like, I don't have responsibilities. I'm 20 years old. I'll have responsibilities when I'm 27. That pissed me off. I hated that attitude. And I didn't realize that other people wouldn't see through it too. And people go, yeah, that's right. I'm like, oh no, that's not what I wanted to do.
Nobody saw through it back then. And nobody knew what we were dealing with when the cameras were rolling.
No.
Right. Cause they did think that was so cool and what a great attitude to have. And we've talked about it. We're like, what 20-year-old has no responsibilities?
Yeah. I worked when I was 16 and, you know, haven't stopped since. And so as far as my impression of you guys, like, I mean, yeah, you're gorgeous and, you know, have these amazing, you know, adorable lives. And it wasn't necessarily something like that was for me, but I certainly enjoyed watching it. Just, you know, I think I was the target audience in many ways. I enjoyed looking at your different personalities. And yeah, Kendra, she could be incredibly naturally funny. There was a lot of things she did that were like just hilarious, but it wasn't because she like had this grand Machiavellian plan of like, oh, look, I'm going to do this thing.
Well, you kind of already did this, but I was going to ask you, did you describe each of us? And did you think our edited personalities matched our real character or like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, did we really match how we were edited?
I always like to say, I hate the term reality television, because reality television is like security footage. And even that isn't real because it's just one point of view. It is an enhanced portrayal of the way you are. Do you like, you know, crafty things? Yes. Is that all there is to you? No. Is Kendra, you know, a slob and likes, you know, rap music? Yes. But that's not all there is to her too. So these were all enhanced things. And yes, the point of the show was to kind of like poke fun at, you know, if Kendra sucks at basketball, or, you know, you're the lady of the manor swanning about, or, you know, getting excited about getting your Porsche. And, you know, these are all enhanced versions. So people say, oh, would you ever want to go on a reality show? I'm like, no, never. Because I think I'm a good person. I think I'm an interesting person, but I'm sure I have weird quirks and tics that I don't want, you know, highlight an example, but I'll absolutely recognize that it's like, oh yeah, I do that thing.
Yeah.
So
did you ever see the Black Mirror episode Joan is Awful?
No, but I want to.
Oh my God, it's so funny. Like, exactly to the point of what you're saying, it's exactly like that, because this lady turns on Netflix and realizes that there is a show about her. Like, it's an actor playing her, but it's her life acted out. But it's like making everything she does a little bit more asshole-ish.
Yeah.
Like a little more obnoxious than it really was. And she's like, what the hell is happening?
But the difference
right now?
It makes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Know. No. And that's the whole thing with editing. Like, you know, if we cut to a pet or a resting bitch face or whatever you want to do. Yeah, that's a choice because we're trying to convey something. But it's also like a litmus with, you know, when you look at a paper inkblot test. It's up to the viewer to decide what they read. Like, there's a classic style of editing where early on in the silent films, they figured out if you show a woman just staring right at the camera and she looks sad, and then you cut to a bowl of soup, you go, oh my gosh, she's so hungry. Or you cut to, you know, a storm outside the window. Oh, she's so cold. Or you cut to a coffin. Oh, she's so sad. You know, it's the viewers in, you know, what they are internalizing that is the motion, even though it's still just the same face. And again, that's the beauty of editing. It's like, I certainly would put my point of view out of, like, if I cut to, like, you know, a look, it's probably because I think that thing was maybe kind of silly. And so I want the dog or you guys to comment on it as well. But someone else may take that as like, oh, what a bitch they're being. And I, you know, mm-hmm. I feel bad about that. But, you know, hindsight's 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. So we always felt like Kendra gets kind of like the hero cut in things. Would you say that's true?
I would say that we had to work harder to make her feel more represented. And that meant making her look good. And not because she was the hero, but because the there was no other nuance.
A not so fun summer.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Like, it wasn't fair that, you know, they would push you because you were emotional and you would cry. Why don't they push Kendra? It's because I think you can imagine what it would be like if they pushed her. She would say, nope, I don't know.
That's fine. What I felt like with, because we had a thing happen in Europe that wasn't on the show. I don't know if you guys caught any of it or not, but when Kendra like wasn't getting up in the morning, so then Mary started yelling at you like it was your fault, and then Kendra started yelling at you, and then like you're the one in trouble and the one being threatened to be sent home, and you didn't understand why. And I'm like, I think it's because, and not that this is right, but I think it's because they know in the back of their heads that if they get Kendra in trouble, she's going to stomp her feet and throw a fit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. And it's not fair.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not fair. But I remember the it's season three, but the snow place like home where you had the
oh my gosh,
the snowboarding mm-hmm. scene out front on the lawn, did not want to participate.
No.
Was a huge thing, and it sucked because it was so pretty and so mm-hmm. great.
It was so amazing, and we customized it to be right up yeah. her alley too, so yeah. that she felt included
yeah.
and that it was something she would love, and she still refused.
Yeah. And again, that's part of the reason, like, again, I worked on Kendra on Top as well, and, you know, had different issues there. I've never met her in person. So again, this is my opinion. This is my experience. Mm. I don't know her as a person, but I would see this footage and I would get so disgusted. It's too strong a term, but just, I just couldn't believe how petty or afraid or difficult she was making it when it just wasn't, you weren't being asked to do that much. And this is it was very hard to make her look anything other than kind of this nice version of her, because there was no alternate.
Right.
Because the alternate is like, we're going to make her look, you know, like a monster, and that's just never going to fly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is, I'm speaking about a woman who was in a difficult situation. So, you know, everyone has their bad day. So I'm not trying to Kendra bash or anything like that. Cause there were moments where she was great, but no, I was frustrated on your behalves because I would see, like, you would do things to make her feel included and then she'd kind of shit on it. Mm-hmm. And like, but if she had something she was genuinely excited about, you know, then it was just assumed that you would be the supporting players to her. But I resented that she would not, she just wasn't a team player.
This feels so redeeming because I feel like these are all the things that we felt, but no one else saw it.
Yeah.
And we finally have somebody else who saw it.
I want to ask too, because I didn't know you worked on Kendra on Top. Do you remember when my book came out and they did that whole fake scene where allegedly, like, I had a book signing at Barnes & Noble, which she was nowhere near, but they made a whole fake scene where she drives to the Grove and acts like she's going to go in and like kick my ass or something, and then decides to take the high road and not do it. And somehow they got footage from my book signing.
I don't remember that episode, but I remember I edited the episode where you came over, and I have feelings about that too.
Which... Please tell me, because, okay, I can tell you what happened there. So Kendra and I were like friends after, you know, we moved out of the mansion. Like, I was totally supportive of her. And I was going over to her house to do a scene for Kendra on Top. And she was very rude and weird when I went to go do the scene. And then, I just kind of brushed it off as, oh, she must be having like a busy day or something. And then I left and I texted her, oh, thanks for having me over. That was really fun. And then I never heard anything from her. And Kevin kept trying to get me to like engage more with her and do more stuff with her on the show. And I said, Kevin, I don't feel right about it. Like, she's not texting me back anymore. And he goes, oh, that's just Kendra. And I'm like, no, actually it's not. Cause we've been on really good terms ever since we both moved out. She would always answer my texts, and now all of a sudden she's not. And I have a theory on what I think went down there, but what's your perspective?
And this is purely my opinion, armchair psychologist. Mm-hmm. Kendra resented the fact that she couldn't break free of being associated with Playboy. And, you know, whether she thought of you guys as friends or not, it's that, you know, you're always being pushed into, I mean, you guys experience this all to your own, you know, that you want to do stuff on your own, but the fans, it is, everyone loves a crossover. Mm-hmm. And I believe the gist of the point of you coming over, because Kendra was, I think, going through some depression at that point, and you were doing well. You'd just gotten engaged, and or at least you were seeing your now ex-husband, and you were doing well in Peep Show, and it was supposed to be an inspirational thing, but she just was annoyed that you were even that you had to be a part of her life anymore. Anyway, like, you, that's great, you're doing that, but why are you telling me? And she just got. She just could not get out of her own way as far as her past feelings to separate that and be happy for you on your own. And I remember editing it, and like, it was weird then. I'm like, Kali's being totally genuine and nice. Like, this is, she's being friendly. You know, I can tell she genuinely likes the decoration of the house. And you guys sit down and you kind of talk a little shit about a certain other person, and you guys
are
kind of
talking shit about
Crystal.
Oh, okay. I was like, is it me? No.
Yeah. Oh my God, that bitch, Bridget. No. And it seemed like everything was, you know, cool and pleasant, but then you leave, and the door closes, and she just slumps over and goes up to the stairs and just sits there. And Hank comes in because he had been somewhere in the house, and he's like, "What's wrong?" And she just kind of unloads on him about. Like, I just don't feel anything. And I just don't know why. And it was, she said, "I don't want to be fake anymore." I'm like, you were just the most fake thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And again, I don't mean to bash Kendra, but I've always felt you guys have been honest and fair, whether it was your book or this podcast or how you presented yourselves in the shows. I believe there is a realness there. Now there's, as I'm listening to your podcast, I'm like, nope, that is not how that went down. I must, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's things that you have different impressions of, but you've always been very clear about, like, this is just my opinion, or you've been like, this is my experience, her experience is different, or like, if she wants to do that, good for her, but this is my, you have always been very, very good about being fair and consistent.
Going back to like format and mm-hmm. rules and stuff like that, I remember Kevin telling me something, and you can tell me if this is true or not, or if he ever told it to you, that he always wanted to start at the mansion and end at the mansion.
Yeah. He very much imagined your show like a 60s television show. Like, you know, it was, you know, he would liken it to Green Acres or Beverly Hillbillies, or the fish out of the water thing. But yeah, it was you start at the mansion, or sometimes in Vegas if that was the thing. And everything always had to end at the mansion. 100% had to end at the mansion. Everyone was home. All the twinkle lights are there, you know. Absolutely. Yeah, that was because it's being portrayed as, you know, a family.
Yeah. Were there any scenes that stand out to you that gave you hesitation when you were editing? Like, for instance, the nudity?
Nudity never bothered me because, like, I mean, I've edited Naked and Afraid, and, you know, it's just,
oh my gosh, I can't imagine what that's like.
It's the people that do all the blurring. They're the real heroes of,
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, for sure. Or like food shaming things.
I mean, and again, I would like to apologize to you for any time that. If I was going for like the joke, I never meant it to be at your expense. Looking back now, I realize that's a kind of a naive attitude to think, oh, well, I'll just do this. And it, you know, I didn't mean it that way, so it doesn't matter, but it hurt you. I genuinely feel very guilty. Aww. About that. There's one line in particular I really struggled with putting in, but it went so well with the scene. It was when you're in Italy eating those pizza donuts, which I still dream about. And you're like, I'm going to move here to Italy and I'm going to just sit here and get fat. And I knew that you had been set up the show eating cake or whatever, you're dieting. And I'm like, I don't want to play into this trope. But it just went so well with the mood and the moment of everyone feeling so relaxed that I put it in. But like, that was I always, always struggled to have put that particular one in. There were other times too. And I did try to get away from that because you're gorgeous. And I'm certainly no one to be, you know, pointing out, you know, any kind of body issues or anything. And it wasn't fair. And I do wish that it could have been lighter or more fun or celebrated, because I think also there's a much healthier body positivity with, you know, what healthy eating is. It can just be portion control or exercising. Mm-hmm. And you were doing that long before it was really kind of trendy, and that should have been highlighted more. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a mixture of some things. I think Kevin thought it was really funny because I, you know, went and complained to him about it. And he just laughed and thought it was hilarious and wasn't about to change anything about it. And then I also think it was the time period. I think mm-hmm. that the early 2000s and stuff, there was nothing wrong with doing those things.
Yeah.
You know,
you did not necessarily want to tell Kevin something you didn't like because he would hold it against you. And he would, when I worked for Kevin, I worked for him off and on for 15 years. When I got an opportunity to work on a different kind of show, it was very easy just to stay and work for Kevin because he kept me working. And I would sometimes get leads on other shows and I'd like say, oh, Kevin, I have to leave halfway through this season of, whatever it is. I stayed all the way through Girls Next Door because I enjoyed it so much. But he would be very much, you don't tell me when you're going to work on my shows. I tell you.
Yikes.
And he would fire people. And
wait, did you remind him you're freelance?
So he would, but he didn't see it that way.
Yeah.
He saw it as permalance, and that he just booked you and rolled you over into the next show and until he didn't need you anymore. Or like you try, and if a show was ending and he hadn't put you on something, you might casually ask the post coordinator, like, so what's my out date? Because I'm starting to get inquiries. And then maybe he's like, oh, we're going to move you on to this. And we're like, oh, well, actually, I have this other thing I'd like to do. But no, it was Kevin. I'll share with you later the thing I wrote for my social media when Kevin passed away is he's an incredibly complicated individual. He could be cruel, but he was never cruel to me. And I am not necessarily proud of the fact that I could see his less desirable behavior in front of me to someone else. And then you just usually just kind of sat there. When you were doing the first episodes of this podcast and you talked about the ways that Hef would control or isolate or pit people against each other, I'm like, well, no wonder Kevin and Hef were such good friends because they did the same thing.
Exactly. I feel like that's a lot of what happened between me and Kendra. Like that one time I went to her house is I felt like kind of a precursor to that was, you know, Kevin thought we were his little puppets that he could control and he wanted to motivate Kendra. Yeah. To do something else. Cause I think Kendra would have been fine, like probably being a supported housewife and mom, but the network didn't want that. They wanted like her doing all this stuff. So he would do things like to get me to do things. He would always flaunt to me like, oh, well, Kendra's on the cover of all these magazines. And you know, if you worked with this person and did that. And then he was like, to Kendra, like flaunting that I was making all this money and doing all these projects and stuff like that. So by the time I get to her house, she's fucking resentful of me. Like it's not working the way he wants. He wanted it to like motivate Kendra to like get up off her ass and do a new project. But instead it just made her hate me, mm-hmm. you know?
Absolutely. I think 100%.
Have you heard people talking about the everything shop?
I really, really wanted to meet you guys. I really liked you guys. But Kevin would not have it as far as I'm sure he didn't want the editors being sympathetic to you or thinking of you in ways that weren't what his overall, you know, how he wanted you to be shaped and portrayed. The anniversary episode, Age of Aquarium, that was the most poignant thing to edit because the interview, I really saw you as far as you being so frustrated because you knew what the producer was asking you to say, but you were not there emotionally. And you said something to the effect of, I'm tired of being, I mean, what do you want me to say? People around here think I'm a joke because you want me to say I'm going to get married, but he's never going to marry me. And yet I still have to pretend like this. And, you know, what do you want me to say? And it was so poignant and so real. And I worked so hard to get as much of you in those interview bites as I could without really pulling the curtain off because Kevin would never have let that fly.
Well, I felt like it went over pretty well because I feel like when people hear my perspective now and you watch it, you can see it. Because in the mm-hmm. interview, I'm saying like, I know I look stupid kind of a thing. Like, you know, I know nothing's going to change. But at the moment when everybody was caught up in what the show was and what the publicity was, they think, oh, she's just so in love. She's crying because she's happy. But I think people get it now that they've heard my side of it. Like the truth is still like woven into the episode,
and that's
even though
what
nobody
I mean,
saw it at first.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by you guys are consistent. Like all these stories, if you go back and you line them up, it makes sense. Like when you're doing your book review, you are pointing out things like, well, this doesn't make sense, even if it's a simple thing as like you know, being at the vanity, seeing the butlers go in and out, like, but that's a totally different part of the house or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. And so my other favorite moment of you where I went, oh, there's her personality was the Ghouls Will Be Ghouls. When you go into Bridget's room and you're going over your itinerary for what you think, oh, and we're going to look at the Black Dahlia gravesite and we're going to do this. Oh, and we're going to go to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery or the Westwood where mm-hmm. Marilyn Monroe's. And you're sitting there smiling and all of a sudden you're like, I'm not going to that fucking graveyard. I'm like, Oh, that's a real emotion there. And then you have to explain why and all that. But that episode, Girls Will Be Ghouls, that was my absolute favorite episode to work on. I had so much fun. The two other editors were John Richardson and Kevin Benson. It was tough. We had Kevin Benson and Kevin Burns. But Kevin had been on season one and John got brought in with me season two. And John was great with all the After Effects. He was the one that really started doing like all the funny graphics and the cartoon stuff and like all the fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So did we. But we just hadn't really thought of doing it. And so that was the episode where we were literally just running back and forth between each other's edit bays and like, look, I made her brain flip open or oh, look, I made lightning come out of his hands and oh, look, I made an orb. You know, so that we had so much fun with that episode.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I love all that stuff. It's and I feel so like good. A little bit of that stuff is in all of them, but the Halloween episode, you guys, I feel like you got to really go crazy.
Yeah. We got to do a full 30 minutes because Captain Morgan had sponsored it, at least for the first viewing.
Oh, yeah. And then, so it got to be a little bit longer.
Yeah. And so on the DVD, it's the full 30 minute longer one. But I think any place else you see it, it's just the regular 22 minute one.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize the different cuts. Well, speaking of that kind of stuff, let's talk about the added lines.
Oh, yes. Clear my name.
Yes.
Okay. So there are, and I wrote them in my notes, so I won't go through them right here. But yes, there were times where we needed, the first time it happened was the San Diego episode. And it's the opening scene where Rascal is looking like he's going to eat the San Diego that you sent up. And we decided to make the joke that, you know, he got it and like, oh, Rascal, Lego my San Diego. So I was cutting that episode and I scratched in my voiceover asking Kendra to pick up that line. So she does it, but it was one of those days where she's just kind of in a, you know, Lego my San Diego. I'm like, well, all right. But now we've got to send the cut up to the mansion. It's still rough cut stage over, so we still have time. Send it up. You guys had watched it, comes back, and then we're doing another pickup interview with her. And they said, we need you to say this line. She's like, I said it. Like, well, no. We need you to say it again. Like, because that's the editor in the cut. No, I heard the cut. That's me in it. And like, and even she didn't know it was me. And I don't think
it was a good impression.
I didn't think I was. And it's so funny. So that ended up airing. And when it aired, I remember playing it for my husband on TV and like, oh, isn't this funny? And she didn't think that was her. And he's like, wait, what? And I'm like, wait, that's me. That's so even he didn't know. So once that flew, then it just kind of like, oh, well, this is an easy fix we can do because, you know, the everything was very chaotic of like when you were traveling or when things were filming. So yeah, I would come in and I would do a little pickup line. It was never an interview. It was never, I never ever did an interview line. It was only like little bits on camera to like, in the wasp scene where she's spraying the wasp, like it's me going, what's in that hat? So, and I forgot how many.
I think I didn't even pick up on that one. Yeah.
I did one for you one time. I did one for you one time in the Tower of London, but I did dub all you guys and I did the London tour guide.
Yeah.
So I did do it maybe, you know, 7 or 8 times, but it was always like, I just watched the last season finale when Kendra is trying to iron her dress. She's like, do they have an iron? And how do you iron? Those are both me.
And I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
That's so good.
So again, it was only to get information out. It was only to make a joke line. It was never, ever, ever to like, I think Playboy is the best company in the world. I wouldn't change a thing, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's talk about that though, too. Then there's the Frankenbited ones, yeah. which are different. So there's wild, we call them wild lines, where like you'll just do something for the tour guide or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then there's scenes where we're saying something, but you can tell or we can tell when it's broken up and it's not really what we said, but the sentences are like kind of strung together.
I know certainly the one in San Diego, you're absolutely right. It's a terrible Frankenbite and I would never have tried to get away with it today where you're like, I think he wants to take the tape.
Oh, yeah.
It's a terrible Frankenbite. But there are definitely times we need to do that, because if a person's talking or telling a story about something that happened, sometimes it matters on the tense. Like, did this just happen, or are you worried that this might happen? Or if a contestant is talking, or you're talking about someone else, and I need to hear the name of the person. So yeah, we will move things around.
Yeah.
I try very hard. Certainly nowadays, I will not make somebody say something that they wouldn't have said if you explained, we need you to say it in this tense or whatever. It was a little looser back then. I would certainly push back on it now, but I like to hope that it at least was in the spirit of the show, maybe not necessarily always in the spirit of what you would have said. But yeah, sometimes you just have to do it out of necessity. I mean, listen to me ramble on. You've got to make things more succinct.
Some of the episodes were like a super quick turnaround. Was it hard making those deadlines sometimes?
Oh yeah, always. I mean, I'm trying to think what the fastest one was, but you could cut about an act a week. And so if it was an episode that had a really fast turnaround, it would be multiple editors on it and not even get an act, but you take this first scene, you take the second scene.
Yeah.
So if you had all hands on deck, you would have a supervising editor who would be the last person to touch it, to like watch everything down to make sure like, oh, you guys use the same music cue or you use the same interview bite. And then at least there'd be a consistency to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens a lot today. Like on MasterChef, I primarily cut like the tastings and the eliminations. And so I'll edit something that's like a really cutting comment from Gordon Ramsay, and the note will come back like, oh, he's criticizing him about something he did in his cook, but we didn't see that in the cook. So either we got to find it in the cook, or we need to take the comment out, because everything has to ultimately make sense.
Yeah, that's crazy, because I know there's episodes like the season 2 finale we were talking about that only had a month turnaround. Like it aired exactly a month after it happened. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I get as close as you can get.
I haven't heard that podcast yet, because spoiler mm-hmm. alert.
Yeah.
But I did watch it, and you guys had commented how it did feel a little oddly paced, as far as like kind of sleepy at the end. And I think a lot of that was music choices, because like there was like this kind of like harp music playing during the cocktail party before you go to light the bunny. It was like this weird kind of trance club music that felt very not Girls Next Door-y. And then when you go up to the casino, there's a point after everything's happening, and then it was going to ramp up to the next level when you're doing shots. But I felt like the music cue like didn't ramp it up to the next level. And I don't know if that was because then they wanted to do it again when you go up to the suite at the end. But there were a lot of just kind of, this is so great, it's so amazing, we're so excited for the future kind of bites. Like I talk about, like it was very, there wasn't time to get those deep introspective thoughts of what does it mean, as opposed to just the very kind of polite surface answer so I don't know if that's why, maybe that's why it felt, you know.
Yeah, we just felt like it was really dragging. We felt like the energy was really low, and it seemed weird because all the good elements were there. We're in Vegas. Mm-hmm. It's the opening of the first Playboy Club. There's so many playmates there that are all our friends, and everybody, you know, like we're having a pool party, and there's just all the elements are there for this to be a wild and crazy, super, we have this amazing suite, you know, with the pool and everything. And it just,
you know what I think it was? And I kind of talked about this before on the episode, but like I've said before, like we didn't really have anything meaningful to do that weekend. It was just very much taking it back to like the home base of Playboy and Hef, which is fine, and not to shit on anything he's built.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've been doing that the last 8 years. But I mean, besides that fact, it's that we're season 2 in the show. People are invested in the girls. They want to see our journey and what we're doing. And going back to, oh, cool, the Playboy Club's reopening. Huge event for Hef and Playboy.
Yeah, I think that me doing the extra interview was like the only thing that was like us related, really.
Yeah.
That was like something we were like waiting to see if it was going to happen.
Yeah. Or like, I mean, Kendra went down and saw her uncle, but it was like, and it was fine, but it wasn't, I don't know. That was also kind of like an odd scene, because like, hey, here's a family member that's here.
Yeah.
I think it's weird. I mean, I edited this stuff, you know, almost 20 years ago, so I can't remember like what I did specifically. I'm pretty sure I edited the tour of the suite and maybe the lighting of the bunny, but I don't remember much. Oh no, I did. I edited the stuff back up when you get to the suite, not the bunny. But I only did like 2 sections of that. So
yeah.
Was the Kendra's like video clip footage, was that kind of like prepped ahead of time?
Here's what I think I remember. I do believe that like the the elements were put together into one tape. So here, put this in. You can just watch this one tape. Kendra's prom picture was not in Colin's room. It was in the guest room. It was, I mean, whether the producers put it up or not, but it wasn't in Colin's room because you can see there's two different rooms. I'm pretty sure that they did at least put together just the collection of VHS tapes, because it would be weird to like just have a tape that's only your daughter, not like
right,
family.
A compilation of just all Kendra's greatest hits from being yeah. a kid.
So I think that is... That is likely, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's had to be how it happened.
Yeah.
So if you're like me, you worry about how typical.
Going back to Age of Aquarium too, did Kevin react to Holly's crying scene?
Oh, yes. And I, as a, you know, late compliment, the scene where you're getting ready with that cute white shirt and the purple, like, he was entranced by how beautiful you looked in that footage.
Aww,
he thought
that's
sweet. You looked, he's like, he was just like captivated by you. And I remember when the producers came back and they said, oh my God, Holly cried on camera and Kevin couldn't wait. And I'm watching it. And then I said, I read the interviews. I'm like, this is not what you think it is, people. But he was, you know, he was a big softy too. He would, I would turn around and he'd be wiping away tears. Or like,
yeah, that that's face, the face that he made.
Oh my God. So yeah, he was a big softie, and I usually got a lot of the emotional episodes. Like I got Your Brother's Homecoming. I got There's Something About Mary. I got When You Went to Alaska. I always got the really sentimental, because I'm a big sap too. Mm-hmm. I'm a cheesy sap. I love that stuff.
Oh, I'm
too.
Not.
Well, the Alaska episode's my favorite episode. So
oh, thank you.
Job.
I can't wait to rewatch it. I haven't seen it.
It's so good. And I love the shot where the three of us are on the swings and there's like three little dandelions.
It really is beautiful.
In the foreground. It's
everybody,
so cute.
And that's kudos to the camera people mm-hmm. for catching that. And whoever the camera person is too, that shot the snow plate, when you are looking out the window and the snow is on the ground, that was one camera person that shot you up in your room, walking, gets in front of you, sees you looking out, runs down out the door, gets back, shoots back up at you looking out, and then shoots. That was the best camera work I ever saw. That whole scene, with the exception there's like a time lapse where you see all the snow getting laid, was one camera. It was incredible.
I'm glad we're hearing that before we watch it. So now I can watch it with that appreciation.
Yeah, definitely. There's another scene in the Age of Aquarium where it didn't make it, but we walk out and Holly jokes about the van.
I wish, I don't remember that. And I was trying to remember what that was, and I don't remember that at all. And did I put that in a deleted scene? But no.
We do want to know about Kevin's pimp cup. I didn't know that was your thing.
That was, yeah.
That's so cool.
Because, like, you know, Kevin was impossible to buy for because, you know, you'd get him a gift certificate to Ruth Chris Steakhouse and he'd be happy. But I wanted, you know, he thought the pimp cup was hilarious. I don't remember who started calling him K-Boo.
I did.
Okay. So I think he was talking about that. And then I think I got the idea of like, oh, let's go to a pimp cup. So I went online and a lot of them are like just cheap, awful plastic. But I found this one artist. It was blown glass. It was purple and gold and put K-Boo on the bottom. And it said, sip, don't gulp. And I had it because it was not, I think it was like $500. It was not,
wow.
It was not cheap, but I got everyone to pitch in. And right before Christmas, he was onlining a session and we took all the posts because they would online in a different location. And we went over there and we all walk into the room. He's like, it's a mass mutiny. And we gave, and he really, really was touched by it, but he genuinely loved it. And then I know that, even, you know, it's been years since I saw him, but I know that he had that in his office. And so that really meant a lot that I gave him something that he actually liked.
Oh yeah. He was bragging about it to me. He's like, look at this. And then it says sip, don't gulp. Cause that's what I tell the editors.
Yeah. Oh, that's what he would say. So he was weird where he either did not want to delve too much into the nitty gritty, unless it was something he was interested in, like the making of something in the kitchen or, mm-hmm. you know, the recipe for the dog pizzas or whatever. Then he'd be like, give me all the details. but he would also say, like, if a scene was going on too long, he'd like, hats and coats, people, let's go. Let's wrap it up. Let's get him out of here. Although, he was very, I remember him, we were reviewing all the scenes that were going to be included in the deleted scenes. And he's like, I want Bridget's striptease in there. And I'm like, I was thinking, but it's in the show. He's like, no, I want the entire thing. And I'm like, and I still didn't quite get what he was asking for. So I think I put in like a longer version of it and he, you know, I want the entire striptease. And he sat there while I pulled it all up. And there were moments where I had one camera, and then I had, I think, Hef's camera. And there were moments when neither camera was pointing at you, so I had to cut away for that. And even that, he's like, no, I want to see it as if you're an audience member. I'm like, I can't. There's literally no one is showing her at this moment. But he was very, very adamant to get that entire thing in it. And I love that last shot, like when you strike your pose and there's the shot behind you. It's so, I had three cameras. So two for the show, one of Hef's, because we had the front and the back. But that was, I got to edit that. That was very fun. And I'm sorry we don't have the original music, but, you know, copyrights. So I don't even know what it is.
It's called The Stripper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other, I was just looking at my notes here, talking about dancing. When you guys were in Barcelona and you went to the flamenco, I earned my paycheck that day making everyone look like they were doing the flamenco dance. And
that's so funny.
So it was half in his you know, little handcuff dance.
Yeah. But, So did you say there are some things that would never be allowed to be featured on
Absolutely,
the show?
Absolutely, yeah.
We want to know what they are.
So I remember specifically was Rabbit Season, and you were wearing the pink, and you went up to your room for a second and Hef intercepted you. And this was my eyes open, oh, that's who Hefner is as well. Because he was so awful to you as far as being critical of this little thing. And I mean, it was bad. And we cut it initially to soften it. And Kevin was like, nope, that is not going in. And then we softened it more. And so it did make it in. But it was, I remember there was another time when you were showing him the gym in whatever season that was. His back was hurting and he wasn't feeling well, but he has to go down those stairs and everyone's filming and it was rushed and it was just kind of a chaotic thing. And I remember him just turning to the camera and what are you guys looking at? And it was shocking. Like him yelling at the crew. The other type of thing that would never have flown was, when you guys are packing to go to Europe, John edited that whole kind of 24 clock countdown, mm-hmm, yeah. Mission Impossible feel. The original cut ended with Kendra going, can't forget this. And she plops down on top of her suitcase, a vibrator. And it's funny, but Kevin was like, there's no way we're showing that Hugh Hefner's girlfriends, you know, have vibrators. And so, you know, again, anything that did not play into that crafted personality of, you know, the eternal playboy, that was all gone. So
that's so interesting, because there's a packing scene in season one where one of the guys has a list and it says toys, and we were so mortified because it shows it in the shot. But I guess it's like, okay, if it's Hef's but not,
yeah,
Kendra's.
Oh wow, I missed that. But yeah, I remember that one was Kevin was definitely like, X-nay, absolutely not.
Was there a scene that stands out to you, or maybe multiple ones, where you really wanted to use it and Kevin was like, no?
It's so hard because, again, you're just going through so much stuff. Mm-hmm. I do remember, not necessarily that I wanted to use, but I remember, I think I used to visit the e-boards. Which is another whole story. But there was, one of you had mentioned that you had like a Grease night and you had like a 50s night. And it was one of those scenes that the cameras were there and they filmed it, but it never ended up in the show. And there just was never anything there to make a scene out of it. I remember, I think I was looking for it, you know, during the, we're trying to put together all the deleted scenes, and there just wasn't anything there to do.
I want to know about the deleted scenes, mm-hmm, and how you guys would decide what would make it to deleted scenes, or how you would decide that this isn't going to make it in the episode.
A lot of times it was just because of time, but we would cut the show as best we could, and then we'd show it to Kevin, and we'd say, okay, well, the show's supposed to be 22 minutes, but we're 30 minutes of content, and he was really amazing, like cutting things I thought that he would absolutely make an essential to be in the show. He's like, okay, we can just lose that and we jump to this part. We don't need all that. So we always, every project, editing project, had a bin where you just would throw stuff that we weren't using, or and so it would just kind of live there. The one scene that was a mistake that we should have been in the what we should have swapped is in Barcelona, the scene where you and Kendra are walking around trying to find something that's open, and everything's closed because everyone's sleeping. That should have been a deleted scene. And what should have been in the show is when you guys go to the Sagrada Familia, because that's obviously much more travel loggy. And I remember Kevin being pissed, because I don't think that when you went to the La Sagrada Familia, that was ever in the show. We just knew it was footage and we would put it in later for a deleted scene. And I remember him being pissed, like that should have been in the show. So sometimes it's just, you know, you only have 22 minutes. So you just put in what you can.
Yeah, we were curious because we were going to do, when we do the deleted scenes, we were going to kind of go through each one and be like, why do you think they cut this one? Yeah.
Most of the time it was for time.
Yeah.
You know, that was usually the defining factor. Like, I think there's a deleted scene for Ghouls Will Be Ghouls where you're getting ready to go on the Cargoyle tour and you're trying to find Holly and you go to the main door, but then you've come out the back. And so it's just this funny.
That's funny. I haven't watched that one yet.
And so
that's
hilarious. It was just a longer version of the scene, but it was funny. But again, we, you know, had to cut it for time.
Yeah, it's funny.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience on season 6? Because obviously we weren't around the mansion at that time. And we're so curious about that time because a lot of people say a lot of things and it's a lot of contradicting stories. Like, what was your impression of all that footage and everything?
It was one of the hardest things I worked on. Some people say like it was, you know, going from 3 girls to 1.5. And I didn't even think it was that. You had to feed them every single line. It was very rare to get an original or an interesting thought. It just was, everything was parroted back. I felt everything was just like a rerun of what you guys had done, you know, going to Europe, getting a Playboy shoot, going to Vegas. And I mean, there are times I remember Crystal just sitting there going, trying to deliver a line, but it's just, there's nothing there. There's no energy. And she's just like, just tell me what to say. And it was painful. And we try to make it as good as we could. And I feel I made it better by, like I said, knowing kind of what the heart of the show should be. But it was miserable. It was not a fun experience. I met Crystal exactly once. I got to go up to the mansion for a screening of an episode. And she was very nice to me. And, you know, she had just gotten her dog and my husband's a dog trainer. So we talked about that. That I find that usually is the great unifier, is to talk to people about their pets. It was rough. I mean, I have not gone back to rewatch it. I mean, if you guys cover it, I probably will.
It's hard. We're gonna cover it.
Yeah.
But it's hard to watch. And I'm not even just being a bitch when I say that. It is really hard.
Yeah.
And that's not a reflection on your work.
No. And there's some other stuff which I do want to share with you, but I don't necessarily want to do it on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So
don't forget it, though. Tell us.
I won't. Because again, it's much more of a blur, and I do not have nearly as fond memories working on it as I did for you guys.
Did you work on the episode where they did the roller disco party with Barbie Benton?
I did not. When they went to Europe, I did the camp out. I did the, I can't remember. I got it. Again, all just blurs.
Was there a point, right? Or at what point did they go, this isn't working?
Honestly, we knew from the beginning. We knew from the beginning that this was, they'd ordered it, so they were going to air it. We knew. It was, oh my God, the baby shower, Kendra's baby shower. I remember that one.
Tell us. Cause I mean, obviously I was there, but my memories are cloudy.
It was a stressful time
for me. And I barely remember, like, obviously it was on season 6, but if you would have asked me a few months ago, I would have been like, was that for Kendra's show or our show or whose show?
Yeah, sure. That's true.
No, I mean, like, in fairness, it's an awkward situation that is being completely manufactured for television. And so it's awkward. And they go to Mary's house, the three new girlfriends, and they don't really have anything to do because they don't know Kendra, and you're throwing the party and you're great at it. So you don't really need help. And they just kind of sat on the front and felt, and then they were complaining that they were being ignored, but they also weren't involving themselves. And then I don't remember what it was, but there was a moment where they did something that set you off, and you go and you talk to Becca. And you were like, I'm not talking to them anymore. And Becca's like, you can't even do it for the camera. Nope. And you were
good.
I don't
remember what the thing was.
Me either. I just remember at one time they sequestered themselves in a room and were telling someone, I don't know if it was Mary or someone, because they were mad because it was like their show, but no one gave a shit. Like,
exactly.
They weren't just naturally the center of attention.
Yeah.
So instead of like participating, it's like, I think they did that. And then you probably heard about that. Cause I think Mary then came back and was like, Bridget, and you're like, what the fuck?
I think she came up to me and said that you need to go talk to those girls and like include them and stuff. And I'm like, fuck that. I'm sitting here trying to throw a baby shower. I've got a lot of shit I'm trying to do. I can't go babysit them.
Yeah. No, but I still remember hearing Becca, like, you can't just maybe for the show, just go. And you're like, nope. And you were like, it wasn't even a, no, I don't think it was like, nope. And that's one thing people say, like, oh, if you could have gone to the mansion, or what would you want to? I want to go play cards with Mary. That looked like, that is oh my God. She looked like she was amazing.
And that was like Captain Bob's sandwiches.
Oh my God, so good.
Let's see. And you worked on Beaches.
I did. I only did a couple episodes. The one thing, the thing I remember most that I did was, I think you're in Croatia and you did a plane ride, and I had put like the ride of the Valkyries. I remember doing that. I think Sarah Underwood was with you. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
I never worked on Holly's World, so sorry.
Oh, no worries. So how long did you work for Prometheus?
Off and on for like 15 years. I think the first time I worked for them was 1999. And the last thing I did for him, I worked on Asian Aliens, but I did a ton of documentaries for them. I got an Emmy nomination for a documentary I did for Kevin for Empire of Dreams. It was a Star Wars documentary. Oh, I named the May the Horse Be With You episode.
Oh. That I always say that episode changed my life, because that's what made me buy a house in Beechwood.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So it was my first time up there, and I was seeing all these like Snow White and the Seven Dwarf houses. I'm like, what is this place?
Yeah.
But no, I did a lot of biographies, did a lot of documentaries, a lot of like secrets of superhero type shows, and Uncracking the Da Vinci Code. Kevin was, you know, very instrumental in my career. I mean, for better or for worse, he definitely made me the editor that I am. So it's, as I said, he's a complicated person.
Yeah. That's
he would
for
always
sure.
say to me, he goes, I can't say it with a straight face, but he'd be like, Holly, everyone wants to work for Kevin Burns, because people know when my name is on their resume that I've put them through it.
It's true. It's true. Like there'll be, you know, cycles in Hollywood of like, you know, feast or famine, and like people are like, is Prometheus hiring? So like but I'm really pleased that, you know, I wondered what would happen to the company when he passed, but you know, it's still doing Oak Island and Skinwalker Ranch and The Unexplained. So, you know, it's still chugging along.
Yeah.
I do wish they would open up the vault and be able to go through these Girls Next Door tapes and like revisit it in some way.
I talked to them. They said they don't have it anymore. They don't have any of it.
I can't believe that. Huh.
Disney owns it now.
Oh, because it's Fox.
Mm-hmm. They said they don't have anything that wasn't in the final product.
What would they have done with the tapes? I mean, because I remember these, you know, there'd be walls and walls of tapes, but.
Yeah. I would love.
Oh, God.
I don't know where I'd put it, but I'd love to get my hands on some of that
absolutely.
Stuff.
Oh, in Rabbit Season, when you have the B-roll of the Playboy Club, and it looks degraded because they put like the old time filter. Kevin hated degrading footage. He would always he'd get the best quality print that he could of anything. Like when we were editing biography, we could use trailers for free, but sometimes the trailers are really bad quality. So he would get like a high quality print and then recreate it and put like the graphics on it and everything, so that the trailer is, it's the trailer, but he's done his own, you know, clean version of it. So yeah, if there was ever any kind of like degrading done to it, he really hated it because he wanted it to be as beautiful as possible.
So you guys took that old footage and made it worse?
Yeah, you just put like a filter over
it. Oh, that's so funny, because I was saying in our episode, I was like, God, this footage, it's so bad. I mean, but granted, you guys, this was back in the day.
But no, we would put a filter over it. And, you know, it also gives that impression of like, it's a flashback, mm-hmm, or like, yeah, especially if it was like season one, or we still do that today on MasterChef, when we like doing a goodbye package and we're showing footage of our highlights from the season, you put like a little filter on it so the viewer kind of knows, okay, this isn't happening now.
Yeah. It's funny because I don't remember specific examples, but I remember in season two, there's like a flashback to season one and it's all like the old footage.
Yes.
Like, oh, that was so long ago.
Oh, there's a episode where you come and get your demo reel done. And
yeah,
Kevin Benson is actually the editor that's there, mm-hmm, but that was my office at the time. And I made the brownies start on the side, and I wasn't trying to be mean. I was trying to be nice and put brownies to the side.
I don't remember. I haven't rewatched it yet.
Anyway, but it was like a big couch like this, and Kevin would come in and he would sit down, and even if we weren't working on that episode and we're in another room, he would have everybody come in because he liked to hold court.
Yes.
And he liked to, you know, he would tell funny stories. He was a great storyteller. He told amazing stories. Mm-hmm. Then he'd give notes, and then we're still kind of held captive. I can't do the notes. And then he's like, well, are you done with those notes yet? I'm like, I've been sitting here the whole time.
Yeah.
I can't. Mm-hmm. But he would watch, you know, if you guys were eating at a restaurant or something, he would get obsessed by it. Like when you were in Germany, he's like, oh, let's go to the Red Lion Tavern. And so he took us all to the Red Lion. It's like an hour just to get there. And then we're ordering lunch and we're a big group and then got to go back to work and get notes. So like, you know, you'd work late because he came in, decided to take a 3-4 hour lunch.
Yeah.
But he did treat us like, I don't want to say like family, because hopefully you treat your family better than that. But he did love us and he did love our team. And I remember when Yvonne DiCarlo passed, who was the woman, the actress that played Lily Munster. And he was a huge Munster, as you know, for the audience, because I know you know. He was so sad. And he came in and like we were like a therapist for him for like 5 hours. He just would sit and I'm listening to him tell stories. And they're great stories. But like, I got a deadline to make, sir.
Yeah.
But no, he was if you could make him laugh or cry, that was the best feeling. I edited a document. I'm just rambling here. Sorry.
No,
sorry, listeners. I'm sure you wanted to hear Bridget and Holly talk at some point. I had a documentary on the character of Superman. It was like a biography on the character of Superman. And one of the segments I had to edit had to deal with post 9/11. What does the world do? You know, what is Superman? How does it exist in a post 9/11 world? So I got some beautiful footage of like, you know, firefighters that have drawn S's, you know, going into, you know, Ground Zero and what DC Comics had done. But I've got, you know, 9/11 footage. And I had started editing this act the day that Dana Reeves, Christopher Reeves' widow, passed away from lung cancer. And she never smoked. So I refer to this time as Molly sits in her edit bay and cries for 2 weeks because it was so hard. It was so hard. But I finally showed it to Kevin and he never changed a frame of it. So like I knew that was like the highest compliment you could get.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, this has been insightful. It really has. And like, I feel like we're going to have you back on too after like, you'll have to make notes for season 3.
Yeah, I will. And if whatever I forget.
Questions, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, totally.
I will say this. So really quick, the e-boards. I would go on, I would try and defend you guys. I was M. Shock and people thought my name was Ms. Hawk, which I thought was funny. And I tried really hard to like people would say, I went to the party and they couldn't even give me 5 minutes to talk. And I'm like, well, there's 1,000 people there. They can't give 5 minutes to everybody. But like, of course, everyone's the hero of their own narrative.
That's so creepy to me. I never thought about it that way because you have all these creeps talking shit on the internet. And for some reason, when I was there, I always felt like at least they were far away. Like it never occurred to me that there were people coming to the parties who would go on the message boards, which I don't know why that didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
But thinking about it now, I'm like, ooh, like I feel extra watched.
Yeah, I can imagine. But it sucked. And they were, and it was interesting hearing you guys theorize that some of the rumors were from the Mean Girls, which totally tracks.
They were. Yeah. 100%.
But as a odd story is that when those closed down, I migrated to other boards and there were people that I actually kind of got to meet and know. And I am actually friends with a handful of group of women who are very diverse, very interesting. You know, there's a fantastic teacher in Ohio. She's an honors English teacher. There's a librarian in the South. There's a gal who used to work for the Navy in Washington, D.C. And it's been quite a journey, like listening to them evolve their opinions as well. And I do have a message I want to share from one of them because I'd mentioned to them, like, hey, guess what, I'm gonna go. and in a way, it was like I really see now how damaging it was for, you know, because again, you're a keyboard warrior and you're behind, but you realize, you know, again, that you are real people, that there's a whole journey. And so it is nice this point in history to allow people to have like this perspective to look back and know that there was more there. Mm-hmm. So they say hi.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi guys.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So should we sign off and then you can give us the season 6 dirt off camera?
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Bridget, for getting all the questions together.
Yes.
Thank you guys for watching. If you'd like more content, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/girlsnextlevel. Check out our merch at girlsnextlevel.shop. And we will see you guys next time. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.